This is the Board Game Rundown, episode number one, Fellowship of the Game.
Hey guys, I'm Tim.
I'm Spencer.
I'm Tyler.
And welcome to the Board Game Rundown. So today we're going to start off with a little bit of news in the board game industry, and then we'll bounce through a series of topics, share our thoughts, our feelings, and any ideas we've got. So the first thing I want to talk about today in the news, it's kind of the biggest thing to hit right now, is the Fantasy Flight layoffs. Specifically, they had started the Fantasy Flight Interactive, which was for they were launching that digital version of the Lord of the Rings card game.
Yes. Through Asmodee.
And then, right, they partnered with them. And then they shut it down, like, relatively quick, because I believe that launched in 2018.
Yeah.
And then they shut it down. And then
just release a bunch of content at the end of 2019.
And then a week later, after all the announced layoffs, then they announced that Star Wars Destiny is ending. Now, in defense of that, the creator of Star Wars Destiny said that from the beginning, he had only had like a limited amount of sets that he was planning on doing, and they've reached that. I believe it was 10. So they're ending at the Worlds, which is like their championship tournament in May.
Yeah.
But then it's done. They're not going to support, well, they're not producing any more content for it. There's going to be no more like prize kits and sponsored tourneys. But it's interesting because what does that signify for like some of their other things? Because the Fantasy Flight Interactive also sort of had a hand in with their RPGs. And I know Star Wars is like a very expensive property to hold on to the licensing, so there's a lot of talk. If that's a thing, like, well, are we selling enough to keep it going? Like, does it financially make sense? The board game industry right now is probably a little too big, a little too bloated. Word on the street from insiders basically that they don't expect like a bubble to burst, but they do expect sort of a natural contraction of the market, like fewer releases, maybe some of the smaller companies getting absorbed by larger companies. I mean, we've seen Asmodee do that a lot over the last few years. It's interesting to see. It's going to be, I mean, when you've got a convention like Essen and they drop like 3,000 games in one day, you know, I mean, the market, realistically, right? I mean, how many of those games are going to be good? 100? 200? 1,000?
But with Kickstarter out there, now you have small independent publishers getting games out that they might not otherwise have been able to do.
And I think that will continue to be a thing, but even now, like, the big Kickstarters are still, like, from Simon or Queen Games, you know, like.
But then you have Awakened Realms. Their first game was that was relatively recent.
Well, it wasn't Lords of Hellas. It was the one before Lords of Hellas. And I'm drawing a blank on it. But Awakened Realms, yeah, they're kind of, they're interesting, right?
Yeah.
All of their games so far have been really good.
Yeah.
Or at least the three or four that I've played have been stellar, absolutely stellar, with the quality of the miniatures, the components.
They just closed one, the Great Wall.
Great Wall. Yeah. They've got another one, what, next month? Two months coming out?
Coming up.
So Awakened Realms is really hot, but I think that those are sort of the outliers, right? Like, I know Stronghold Games is going to start, well, it's not even Stronghold Games anymore. It's now like Indie Board and Cards. They're going to start putting out less stuff each year. Queen Games, they basically use Kickstarter as like a pre-order system. Yeah. So, which is essentially what like CMON does too, right? CMON does a similar thing. And so while that is good for the industry in some ways, at the same time, you're not gonna just see as many of these, like, can't call them mass market, but like these, you're not gonna see companies doing 20,000 copies of 20,000 units of like a specific game. They're going to start doing smaller units, but then that's going to drive the cost up because it's cheaper when you can produce more units. But then you know what I mean? There's a whole ebb and flow. So it's going to be really interesting to see, because I do feel like this is a signifier for things to come in the industry. Like, this is not a Fantasy Flight alone.
Well, I don't even think it's Fantasy Flights. I mean, I was looking at how many games they currently have out on the market, and it is impressive. and they're all big games.
Fantasy Flight? Oh,
Fantasy
yeah.
Flight.
With their...
KeyForge, Arkham Horror, all Arkham Horror.
Yes.
They have tons of Lord of the Rings games.
Mm-hmm.
Twilight Imperium. Cosmic
Which is
Encounters.
Out of print right now, but yeah.
But Twilight they can bring it back.
TI. Yep.
And they closed down their interactive branch. How many businesses out there, how many game companies have come up with video versions, video game versions of their games?
Oh, yeah.
Scythe has one that you can get on
version.
Steam. All these digital versions.
Gloomhaven, Terraforming Mars, you can even play on iOS.
Yeah. Is that what's going to start crashing first?
No, I don't think so.
Or is that going to keep it alive?
I think having a digital copy of the game is going to be a little bit easier because there are games out there that allow you to make your own board game. You just replicate what the board game is. But by having the digital copy, you allow people who, you know, that do the single player aspect of games.
Mm-hmm.
And cleanup is so much easier when all you have to do is hit reset.
My wife and I play Lords of Waterdeep a lot on the digital version. Even though I have the box on my shelf at home, and I go to pull it out, and it's like, oh, this is a lot to set up. And she's already on her iPad, and I go get on my iPad, and we play sitting next to each other, but on our own devices.
And now we have games that combine the two of them, app-driven games.
Right. And those make me nervous, because if and when they do stop becoming supported, like Golem Arcana, for example.
You'll never be able to play the game again.
Potentially, right. Yeah. XCOM is also problematic with that. XCOM relies on
Journeys into Middle-earth.
Something else that I was going to mention, too, like you mentioned it, we have our game shelf back here, and you know, you can only have so many physical copies of a game in hand, whereas I can see where it's easier to keep so many more games in like a tablet or an iPad.
Right, right. And so, to your point, I don't think that that's going to hurt or necessarily help the industry. I think it is enough of its own thing, and I don't think that that's going to go anywhere because, like Tyler's saying, there is a demand for it, right? Because not everybody has got a big old Kallax in their house or a space for it, you know?
Or access to people who can come over and play the game when you can do it online.
Right, right. So it I think it's just sort of another branch, you know, another avenue. I don't think it's big enough to buoy like a... And I wouldn't say that the board game industry necessarily needs a life preserver right now because it's vibrant, right? Conventions right now are huge. Convention attendance is huge. When that starts dying off, then you got to worry, right? But it's the board game industry still needs to find a way to reach out to more people because it's not quite mass market. Like it's exciting when you walk into a box store and you see that they have board games there, like that aren't just Monopoly.
Beyond Settlers of Catan.
Right. Well, and even Catan though is a good indicator, right? It's like, okay, like that's not your...
It used to be. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I mean, now everybody's like, boo, Catan, whatever. And I get it. It's fine. I like Catan still.
I do too.
But yeah, I mean, but now there's so many more games, so many new games. And the issue though is that you still have to reach out and get more people playing. And that is happening, right? Like the hobby has grown so much just in my like 6 years of being a hobby board gamer, like on this level. So it's there. The growth potential is there, but I think the production of games has surpassed the growth. So the growth has to catch up.
But one of the differences, a lot of people, they used to play games like Monopoly or Scrabble or Sorry.
Sure.
And when you say we're going to have a board game night, they think, oh, we're going to play Clue.
Right.
And so they're starting to realize there are actually fun games out there.
I like Clue. I mean,
But which version of Clue?
But okay, just regular old Clue. And I will admit that since I've really gotten into like hobby board games, I've not gone back and played Clue. But I would also not go, oh no, I'm not playing Clue.
I'm willing to play Monopoly even, but it's not the thing that I go and pull off the shelf.
Sure.
It's not the thing that I say, hey, do you want to come over and play a game? We're going to play Monopoly.
Right. So, all that being said, I think moving forward, it's going to be interesting to see what 2020 brings for the game industry. I think you are going to see a reduction in the amount of games, and you're going to see some companies get absorbed. And I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing. I think that it is like sort of a healthy retraction, you know, yeah. as the up and down of the, you know, the economic flow of things, right? It's sort of just part of the natural cycle. But I don't think it's like a bubble that's going to pop and then everything's going to go. And then we're going to lose all of our awesome board game creators. You know, but it, I do think that, that Fantasy Flight was a little bloated and now is...
They do have their fingers in quite a few pies.
Right, and they pay for a lot of licenses.
And they do.
A lot of licenses, right? Because Lord of the Rings is not cheap.
And Star Wars.
And Star Wars is the big one. That's the biggest one right now. Yeah. So, but anyway, so moving on.
Well, there's one thing I wanted to mention.
Oh yeah, no, go for it.
So the last event that they're going to have is May 1st. Through the 3rd in Roseville, Minnesota. It's the World Championship for Star Wars Destiny.
Right.
And that is basically the last chance you'll ever get to play it because they will no longer be supporting any of
it. Right. So that's your last time you can play it and get prize support.
And get, yes.
Right.
And also, if you're worried about the Lord of the Rings Adventure card game, they will continue to support the servers. And there's no word on when they will stop supporting the servers, but they, in February, will be... closing down any updates, but they will still support the server, and it will be on PS4, Switch, Xbox One, and Steam.
That's not too bad, right? Because
no, it's not too bad, because you'll still be able to play it.
For probably a couple of years.
For a couple of years.
And then it's going to go away, which is sad, because if I feel for the people that invested any or a lot of money into,
oh, yes.
into those, and then it's like, oh, now I can't play this game.
Yeah, and now a lot of the updates, if they've come out, are free, because...
Right, right. Which, to Tyler's point, where earlier when he's talking about like it's really nice to have all these digital games, it's like, well, like these games are always supported, you know.
Right.
So you know, you can't. It's cake and eat it too, right? Like right now we're okay. You can do a lot of that with both, but yeah, I think that you're gonna. I think there's always gonna be sort of a constant flux and shifting as long as the industry stays healthy. Like it is right now and, yeah. and continues to find ways to grow. Like when Gen Con isn't just an insane mess to go to, that's when you got to start worrying that like, oh no, like what's happening? But right now Gen Con is insane. It's really fun and it's really horrible at the same time just because of all the stuff and the people and everything. But that's those are all good signs for the gaming industry, you know, on a whole. But anyway, so... Now that we've beaten that horse to death, we had some sad news this week that Spencer wanted to talk about.
Yes, so on the 16th of January in 2020, Christopher Tolkien, the third son of J.R.R. Tolkien, died. He had stepped down from being in charge of the estate in 2017. So the estate is currently being run by his nephew and his wife. So it's fine. You don't have to worry about people not being able to get the licensing. But it is a sad news. He did a lot for the Lord of the Rings world. Not only did he collect all of the writings of J.R.R. Tolkien and put them together into the Silmarillion, he also made the Unfinished Tales, which is kind of the correction to the Silmarillion once he found even more stuff. He released tons of poems and books. His last book was in 2017 or 18. So considering how much he's contributed to not just that world, but also the genre of fantasy as a whole.
Right. So in a way, he was so much more important to the Lord of the Rings legacy than maybe even people realize, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Because he nurtured it. I mean, so he was in charge of the estate since once his father passed. Like
in 77, yeah.
So he's been... So basically any of the games that, if you've played any of the Lord of the Rings games or the movies, right, he is basically given the blessing and...
Yep. And even The Hobbit was written with him as the intended audience.
Oh, nice.
So...
There you go.
So I just wanted to see, what are your guys' favorite board games that are in that IP?
Oh.
There are so many.
War of the Ring. I mean, War of the Ring is the easy one.
War of the Rings is an easy one.
Hunt for the Ring. I even, before I was like really a tabletop gamer in this sense, I had the Lord of the Rings Risk where And, you know, it's in addition to that, just being a fan of the movies, you know what I mean? And the lore and the books and just everything that they, even the animated movies, you know, oh, yes. From my childhood to age myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Oh no, I watched them too. One of my favorite authors, Peter S. Beagle, did the screenwriting for the Lord of the Rings animated feature.
So there you go.
And he also did the foreword to the books.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So it's a huge influence, right? It's like, in a way, thanks to Peter Jackson's movies, right? They kind of have even seen like a resurgence, you know, in modern culture. And then on top of that, then the board gaming industry grabs onto it like they do any really good IP and start cranking out a bunch of games. Almost all of the ones that I've been exposed to have been pretty good, though. It's not like the Cthulhu Mythos where there's just some stuff that's... Cthulhu is just like duct taped on the side of the box, and it's like, yes, this is a Cthulhu game. Lord of the Rings games all seem pretty solid.
The estate is very particular about giving out their IP.
So, what's your favorite one?
I have a soft spot for one that is a terrible one.
Uh oh.
It was 1985. It's called Riddle of the Ring, but it's because that old game I grew up with. It's one of the reasons I've always been a board gamer.
It's like some kids, when you're a kid and you watch like this movie that then you go back and watch as an adult and you're like, oh, how did I like this?
Exactly.
You know,
I bought a copy of Riddle of the Ring and I played it with my brother and he was awestruck that I found a copy.
Sure.
And we played it and we're like, oh wow, this game is terrible. The map doesn't even look right.
Nice.
But we had a kick out of playing it anyway because of the nostalgia.
That's all that matters.
Yeah.
And that's something great that we can still take away from this with board games in general is that, you know, you find a group of friends, you sit down, you take something like Lord of the Rings or Star Wars or, you know, something else, and you just sit there and you can enjoy it, even if it is a bad game. Like, you know, you'd like to find a great game, but bad game you can still have fun with,
and
right?
Sometimes there's like fellowship in how horrible a game is, right? It's like Absolutely. Watching a bad movie and you're like, oh, this is terrible. Guys, wait until you see how awful this is and you start doing whatever, you know? So yeah, there is a lot. You're right. That's the awesome thing about the board game community is that it reaches out through either IPs like Lord of the Rings or Star Wars or comic books, right? And it's just another avenue, like another reason to get together. Like, we are friends first because of board games.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, and we've got all these other interests and things we like to do.
That's how we met.
And talk about. Right. We met at a board game shop to do a tournament.
Yeah.
We met because your cousin brought you over to play games with us.
Right.
So, I mean, like, specifically for board game stuff. And that's why IPs are so important. Like, if you've got really good ones, really solid ones, and that's why they need really good gatekeepers, right? Because you get two bad Lord of the Rings games in a row, it could, all of a sudden, people just stop looking at them.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
Know, and stop get, I don't know, last one's kind of stunk. Like, why would I want another one of those, right? I mean, you could throw a rock and hit a bad Cthulhu Mythos space game.
Yeah.
And there's a ton of really awesome ones. And I'm a sucker for the genre, full disclosure, right? But I will also be the first one to admit...
Not all of them.
No, not all that glitters is gold. But, so anyways, it's really sad to hear. Like you said, I hope that the estate, they continue sort of that good... The good efforts, the good decisions, you know, that they've been making and...
Well, they have released a new series that's going to be pre-Fellowship of the Ring.
Okay.
So it's going to have all new content. I'm curious to see how much of that was taken from the other writings.
I was going
to
say, who authored that?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'll have to look into that.
So I'll have to watch.
Yeah.
And then I'm sure there will be board game spin-offs. Yeah, they're from Fantasy Very Flight
well.
Or somebody
Very
else.
Well.
Afterwards, right?
Yes.
Because, so the Cthulhu Mythos, for example, the reason why there's so many... bad games and good games, there's no licensing on it. I mean, we could make a game right now with Cthulhu in it and not have to pay anybody. So, you know, there's no estate managing it, you know, or anything like that. So it's important. It's important
it
to have a good leadership and guidance.
And just as an example of the fact that they do care, it was relatively recently the estate actually sued the movie makers because they hadn't seen a penny.
Oh.
And they settled out of court, so no one knows the result, but they did say that they were all satisfied with the result.
Well, given how much money those movies made, I'm sure it was a healthy amount.
But that does show that the estate is active and the estate actually cares about
it.
Now, those... granted, Christopher Tolkien hated the movies. but what can you say?
But
we like them. And,
well, I didn't like the Hobbit one so much, but this isn't a movie show, so it's a board game show. So let's stay on track. So
I don't think there's a Hobbit board game, is there?
I don't know. I don't think so. Riddle of
the Rings was particularly Fellowship, the whole Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Oh, okay. Going with Gollum, trying to riddle with him, too.
No, you're taking the ring from the Shire down to Mordor. Or actually, you discover the ring somewhere.
Okay.
And if you're the good guys, you're trying to throw it into the Mount of Doom.
Right.
If you're the bad guys, you're trying to give it to Sauron. And of course, the two places on the map are right next to each other. So inevitably, it ends up where everyone's at the bottom of the map, and they're just throwing cards at each other, and ends up with the last card wins.
What's the riddle?
There are certain cards in the game that are riddles.
Okay. Because I got excited about some riddles. Like, I was like, let's go.
No, I wish.
Like, I could do some riddles. Let's see. But no, it sounds like it's just you're playing war until you get to the end. Like,
essentially. You go to different cities and collect cards, and that's the core of the game.
Yeah, okay.
Like I said, it's not the greatest game.
In 1984, it might have been.
Maybe.
I mean,
maybe.
There's a few decent ones out by then, but whatever. Anyways. So moving on, we're going to talk about some Kickstarters coming out that are, well, at least one of them is absolutely doing gangbusters. The first one is Restoration Games' Return to the Dark Tower. So Dark Tower was it from the early 80s?
I think it was 84.
84? Okay, so 1984. I've seen the original at conventions. I've never played it. I've heard people griping about like the tower not working. But also at that point, you know, it's a 25-year-old. You know what I mean? The game's...
Yeah. Well, that's the exciting thing to hear is that, like, this is the time before I was even born. And you had this great board game that was out there. And, you know, I wasn't even around to experience
it.
Right. But they've taken it and they've remastered it. And here we are.
So Restoration Games has a pretty good track record of... not necessarily just reissuing, right? But kind of updating older games. Yes. So Fireball Island, for example, was one of their big ones. They're famous for it. Fireball Island in the 80s, in my opinion, is a terrible game. It's super cool to look at. It's fun to flick the marbles like twice.
Yeah.
By the end of the game, you're like, okay, can we be done? Can we play something else? In my opinion, I'm prepared to be wrong. I'm prepared for that to be unpopular. Yeah, but Restoration Games, so they redid it, updated it. It's got like, you know, some good stuff, some expansions. Still a terrible game. But it's my sister described it the best way I've heard. She's like, it's a toy. So, you know, if I was going to play it with my 8-year-old or my 3-year-old, they're like, yeah, this is a toy. Like, I don't really care how this goes, right? Or that we play correctly. They're going to want to move their guys around and launch the marble to see if it hits their dudes.
Well, I got to say, Return to Dark Tower does not look like just a toy.
No. So that's what really surprised me, right? Is because I was not initially... I've been hearing about Return to Dark Tower for like 2 years.
They've been working on it for more than that.
Right. And it's Isaac Childress who did Gloomhaven. And then I can't think of the guy's name who did Pandemic Legacy.
Yeah.
Working together. And the game looks like a real game. Like a real game.
But it's one of the games that involves an app.
Right. And that makes me nervous. Except that they did announce, I believe today, that I think it was Jeff Engelstein, I could be wrong, somebody... has basically pledged that if the app ever stops being supported, that then he will take over and make sure that the app stays alive.
So here's the thing that I'm excited about. So
the giant tower in the middle.
The giant tower in the middle. So, you know, with most board games, you have to set everything up. And, you know, for this game, you will have to set something up. But you're going to have this massive map in front of you with a giant tower just sticking right out of the middle of it. And, you know, I can't say for the future games coming up, but this could be one of those projects that just makes us think, well, what is it about a board game that you enjoy so much? Because with this tower, it actually adapts to you. I don't know if we're talking about AI or, you know, whatever, but you have a board game that's going to interact with you based on how you play. We all have ways that we can play a game with our friends. But if your friends don't know your strategy, they may not be able to pick up on it in time. But you're going to have this tower that might be able to pick up on what you're doing.
That might know what you're doing. Right.
Well, that's one of the things about Return to Dark Tower is it's a fully cooperative game, up to four players. So it is only you versus the game. It's you versus the tower and the app.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that's how the original was. It was you versus the tower, right?
Yeah.
Right. And everything. Except for when the tower didn't work. Or, you know, other little glitchy kind of things that you would get from an 80s board game. I mean, you and I both have played, like, Omega Virus. Now, granted, that's a 90s game.
But it's cheesy as hell, and I love it.
But where you're playing against the game. But it's fun. I still like that game.
Yeah.
Like, it's still fun.
My
is
six,
cheesy.
My now 8-year-old loves the game.
See? And that's also perfect. And so my concern also, so Restoration Games, I was at a game store for a game day. My buddy pulls out his copy of Fireball Island, and I hadn't seen it yet. And I'm like, oh, yes! Like, let's play it. And I go to pick up the box, and the cardboard on the box was so flimsy and so thin. I mean, it's like if you went to and bought, like, a little gift box that you unfold and you put a shirt in and wrap it for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that level.
Wow.
So terrible. And I was like, are you kidding me? Now, the rest of the game is good. Like, the components are all really good. But it's like, really, you guys couldn't pay for, like, a real box? I sincerely doubt that that is what's going to happen with Return to Dark Tower. But initially, I was like, not excited, right? Because
right.
I was like, oh no. But with the designers behind it, I don't love Pandemic, but there's no denying, like, the impact that Pandemic Legacy had, right, on the hobby. Because it kind of, all of these games now are getting legacy versions, or
yeah,
just strictly a legacy game, right? Like Clank even has a legacy version now, Machi Koro has a legacy version. It's like, there's no way in a million years you would think that Machi Koro would have a legacy version.
I didn't even know that they did.
They do. Just came out like a couple months ago.
Oh.
But then Gloomhaven, right? Nobody, even if Gloomhaven is not for you, there's no denying, like, the game that is Gloomhaven, you know, and the popularity and, like,
the
also.
It
it is now also sort of this giant monolith in the culture. You know, a huge reference point. So I think Return to Dark Tower, and plus it's what, almost $3 million right now?
It's $125 to buy it, and they're up to about $3
million. Yeah, they're going to be well over $3 million by the time it ends, and it ends in like 2 weeks, give or take?
It still has more than 20 days on it.
Okay, so that gives you an idea of when we're recording this, but by the time this comes out, it's still going to have like at least 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So it's huge, it's massive, it looks super cool, but it's $125.
Well, see, that's something you got to look at, too, here, is you are getting a sophisticated upgrade version of a board game. So how is that in the future going to affect, like I said, the industry?
Right.
So you have things like the auto deck, like where they shuffle the cards and they can deal you out like a deck builder, you know?
Yep.
That's something. But, you know, how is this game specifically going to maybe impact the way you play board games?
With the unique design, I mean, because they are bringing like a whole new thing, right? That's not in any other game.
But
right,
that's
now
also something that concerns me is this going to be popular because it's a novelty? And what happens when that novelty wears off?
Yes, and I don't know. So, and it's fine. It's fine that it's a novelty, right? Because now I am a hypocrite because I just scoffed at $125 price tag on a Kickstarter, and I have backed Kickstarters for more than that.
Oh yeah, me too.
And I play the heck out of them. And while, like, Awakened Realms is a great one, right? Like, I've got Lords of Hellas, you've got Nemesis. They've got miniatures of varying amazingness, right? Like
all
in size.
Amazing.
And the thing, though, is yes, it is sort of a novelty to have like these super cool gigantic miniatures. Cthulhu Wars, right? Like one of my all-time favorite games. Gigantic miniatures. I love them. It is a novelty. But for me, in that game specifically, and even Lords of Hellas and Nemesis, right? There's so much game in there.
There is.
There's so much game in there. You could put that down and come back and play again later, right? And not everybody is going to love that game, but I know if I said, hey guys, I'm going to play Cthulhu Wars, I need 5 people next weekend, I'm going to have 8 people asking me to play. You know what I mean? And that game, I got it in 2015. You know what I mean? Like, so I can still... I think that Return to Dark Tower, assuming that you change the batteries in the tower, will probably, because it is so unique, unless it just is completely terrible, because I think that's what's going to have to happen, is it's going to have to just be bad. And that's possible, but I would say unlikely.
Yeah, it would have to be the gameplay that kills it, because I don't think any of the other components would.
No, the tower itself looks awesome, right? You're dropping skulls in the top, and it's spitting them out at you.
The map has noises.
And it comes out in different sides, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the map, it's very thematic. Everything, it's trying to bring you into the world and into the game, which is a thing the games are doing now.
Right.
So I think it'll probably...
I think it's got some shelf life. Yes, the novelty, the nostalgia is going to drive a lot of the sales. My issue... So I guess my real problem with it is I'm hoping that my local store gets it so that I can buy it there, because I think if I buy it on Kickstarter, I'm going to have to get the other tier where you get all the expansions with it.
I actually...
And I'm guilty of that. Like, I have that FOMO, that fear of missing out, where it's like, I don't want to just... I want to just dip my pinky toe in, right? But it's like... And I sit there and I look at all the add-ons and all the things. And I have games where I've used everything. And I have games where I have yet to touch the expansion. And
yeah.
So I find myself like in that precarious position of, what do I do?
Well, when I look at the expansions for it, one of them I think is a good expansion. It's $30, and it's the one that gives you 2 new heroes. And in the game, every hero has their own abilities. So having access to 2 new heroes could very dramatically change the gameplay, give you much more shelf life. So I think, I would go for that one. The other expansion seems to just be for miniatures. I didn't seem... is something that they're doing now a lot on Kickstarter, but I cannot justify that all the time.
No, and that's the thing, right? Is
we're later, it only comes with 4 miniatures.
Later on, we're going to talk about some mechanics and things we like in board games, and I love awesome miniatures in a game. Ironically, my mechanic will steer completely away from that. But that's my problem also, right?
You want
because
miniatures.
I would want the miniatures, because Tyler and I go to conventions and we play games, and man, like, we have fun when we set up a big old game on a table and it's got all these big miniatures or awesome components, right? And we're playing and we're into it, and then people walk by and you're like, I know, it's great, right? You know? And that's just the kind of gamer I am, though. That's my personality. I like to have if we've got a big game, like a cool-looking game, like, I don't mind talking about it. I'm excited to talk about it to other people. Return to Dark Tower, we're going to see that. We're going to go to Origins. Well, we won't see it at Origins. It won't be out yet. But, you're going to see it at conventions. What, it comes out February of next year?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like, assuming that it fulfills on time and everything.
Yeah.
But, so a year from now, you're going to see it all over the place. So I just need one of you guys to back it so that I can play your copies.
Yeah, see, that's the thing I can see too, is like, say all your friends go and they, kickstart this or whatever, and the next thing you know, you've got all these, big space taken up on your shelves, which we've already talked about. You know, how much space for a game can you save for your shelf? And at the same time, like, I'm excited a little bit because we are introducing, and when I say we, they are introducing a new component, and that will drive up how much you have to pay to kickstart something. because you're going to have newer technology.
It's so unique. It's so unique, right? And yeah, and because of the nature of it, right, you're buying a computer, you know, to put on your table. So moving on from Return to Dark Tower, because that was probably the most exciting one. I'm kind of excited about this one specifically for the miniatures. So
Foundations of Rome.
Yes.
By Arcane Vendors. Arcane Wonders, sorry.
Arcane Wonders, yep.
Yes.
And it's like $125?
$99 for the base.
Right. Oh, no, it's more than that. It's like $150.
Yeah, when you start getting the other stuff, it gets more. Now,
did you see the final pledge level? Now, they only did 10 of them.
Oh, the $1,000 one?
The $1,000 hand-painted.
Yeah, hand-painted. So all the miniatures
are
buildings.
I know you were interested in that.
Not that interested, because I'd have to pay for a divorce in addition to that $1,000 board game. Well, and a place to put it.
So all the miniatures are buildings from ancient Rome and Greece. I think it's mostly Rome. And they, most of them also have an addition of a god or something on them.
Right.
I would have given those... Out of a rating of 10, I would give them about a 7. I thought that they could have been a little bit better, but they were pretty good.
The hype leading up to the game, I've been aware of the game for about 3 months. As I started, like, on Facebook, I started seeing sort of ads and buzz for it. And I started seeing it, like, in other Facebook groups and other social groups that I'm in. You start to see, like, oh, okay, like, watching for it. My concern is, while I think the table presence is going to be amazing, and I do love table presence, as we just talked about, I'm worried about gameplay. Like, Return to Dark Tower, I'm not that worried about gameplay. I like a good co-op. You know, like, there's something very satisfying if we're playing a game. And because as much as I love to gloat and lord victory over my friends when I do beat them at games, which doesn't happen often, I love an awesome co-op game where we all, like, just the satisfaction you get. So that's why Return to Dark Tower, I think, that's another positive thing for it, in my opinion. Some people hate co-ops. But Foundations of Rome, I'm a little worried about the gameplay.
I'm not.
Okay.
Emerson Matsuuchi is the guy who's making it. He did all the Century Rogue games.
They're all good.
And so he's somewhat of a veteran in this field. I think he's got it. I watched a few gameplays of it. I'm not so worried about gameplay. I actually don't think it has a table presence.
But you don't think it's enough?
Of course, the ones I watched were beta versions.
The prototypes, right.
The prototypes. Right. So I know it's a very simple idea. You don't have, you know, cool powers or anything. It's more like a strategy game, chess or something, mixed with a bit of drafting. So you're going to be... All you buy is a plot of land. And the cards that you buy the plot of land are like A6, D7.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So on a grid, right?
Yeah, on a grid. And so you just, there's a grid. I got my little thing on it. And then when you have enough of them, you can take your cool little miniature.
So if they all connect, right? So like New York 1901 and things like that.
So I know it's going to be successful. It's already way successful.
Way successful already.
I don't know if it's going to have the replayability, unless you're really into that kind of a strategy game. And if you are, if you're into heady strategy games, this one will probably be right up your alley.
Sure.
Which actually I do enjoy.
I do enjoy those as well. The problem sometimes is getting the right group, right? Because I can't tell you how many times that Tyler and I, because we have a couple different interlocking game circles, and we will have games... Where we're like, yes. And then somebody comes over and you're like, oh no. Well, we're not going to play this, or this. We're probably going to play from this. And that pile of games is also fine. But like, I've gotten to the point basically now where there's sometimes where it's like, hey guys, I'm having a game night, but I'm going to play this.
Right.
You know, specifically. And then if we play other stuff afterwards, awesome.
You know, something else, too, that I've noticed, like, with your local stores, board game stores in your area, some of them do have, like, a gameplay room to where you can, like, try and just bring a game that you want to play, like a strategy game. And, yeah, you may not be able to play it all the time, but you do have these stores that you can go to and set these games up.
Right.
And maybe somebody will be there will be interested.
And you can, you can arrange, most of the time, in my experience, you can talk to the owner of the store. Most of them are happy to interact and get people and be like, hey man, you want to plug this? you know, and say, hey, like, anybody wants to come and try this game out Thursday night, right? And you can get people. I've done that. I've had moderate. I mean, I've always been able to get, had enough people to play the game, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I think that Foundations of Rome, I think Return to Dark Tower, you can get probably anybody, once you've got an idea of how to play it, you can probably get most people, like, just because it looks...
It's exciting.
So amazing. I think that Foundations of Rome is going to be a little dry, right?
That's like, exactly it looks, what they put down dry, right?
Look at that. But I think it looks really cool, like, once you get going, but it is... Because I love the idea of, like, building the city, right? And watching the city grow, like, I think it would be amazing to see sort of a time-lapse of as the game is played, as how, like, as the buildings grow and pop up.
And to watch, you know, your neighbor over there block you, and so you have to figure out how to block him back.
Right, and so, but that's where you're either going to play with people that can handle that kind of game, or you're going to play with people, or you just don't play with people that are going to be a nightmare the rest, because they're just crying the whole time because you blocked them. Yeah. And it's like, no, that was my best move, I'm sorry. You know, and we all know people like that. I try really hard actively to not be that person, because it can get frustrating sometimes.
It happens once in a while.
Right.
You get frustrated in a game.
The game that we first played together, we played Ticket to Ride.
And I did that to you.
No, I did that to you and I won.
No. Remember?
You did that to me and then I was able to block...
I blocked off Las Vegas. I didn't even need it.
And then I was able to block him off and then got longest track because of it.
And
it was
that killed me.
And I won.
That's also important.
Hey, if I recall correctly, your daughter still got a prize. She got to pick out a game as a prize, so she was happy.
But no, I think we're both winners, because that's how we met.
Absolutely, bro. It was a good time, man. It was a good time. But that's, like, again, the awesome thing about the industry, the hobby, right? So Foundations of Rome could be dry, could be amazing, right? Especially if you're playing with the right people.
And I am a huge history buff, Rome especially.
Right, so it could be...
I personally love the idea. And
okay, so you get Return to Dark Tower. You get Foundation. And I'll get the Apex.
Apex is our next one on our list.
Apex Theropod.
Apex Collected Edition. It is interesting. I like to think of it as evolution plus dinosaurs.
Well, it's more... So, confession. I have the original Apex before the Collected Edition. I've not played it. I picked it up at, like, a flea market, and
you need to bring it over.
I know. I should. I need to learn how to play it. I went through and I sleeved it. It's one of those things where it's like, now I've just, because it's more complex than a lot of deck builders. It's not a bad thing, because I love deck builders. Some of my favorite games are deck builders, but it's definitely crunchier, right? But the theme looks super cool. Which is what drew me to it originally. Like, oh, I've got to find this game. Because I don't think it got a huge release outside of Kickstarter, its initial Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. So it became very hard to find. So, of course, I finally find one. Haven't played it for 6 months since I found it. And now they've announced a collected edition.
It has 8 expansions now.
Right.
And you can get all of them through this Kickstarter. It's over 1,000 cards.
So you can do the expansions a la carte.
Yeah, you can do the a la carte expansions.
You can just get the game.
You can just get the game, which I believe has 8 different species decks to choose from.
Yes.
Or 7 or 8. And then you also will have 8 expansions. And they're not all dinosaurs. One of the expansions brings in a sci-fi element where you're running around with Cyber T-Rex.
And, sounds alright.
Okay, that's pretty cool too.
That's alright. It's kind of like Smash Up, but maybe better.
Yeah.
Right?
It's also a solo game.
Yes. And the solo community is like a huge thing right now.
Yeah.
And there's a huge group for solo gamers. As a father of 2 young children, sometimes solo gaming is my only option. And sometimes that's barely an option, because it's like between them and the cats, it's like, get off of my game! Get out of the way.
I have to leave mine set up on the table in the basement so I can come back to it when I have time.
Right, as you go put out a fire and then come back. And...
Exactly. So it's designed and drawn by an artist. Not technically drawn. It's a digital artist. Herschel Hoffmeier. And if you are a dinosaur nut like I am, he is a professional artist for dinosaur books.
Oh, right on. And But interestingly enough, they do acknowledge that they're not all like the actual specific representations, which is fine.
It's not all scientifically accurate, but what they did try to do is go back and say, they used to think this, so we're going to throw it into the game.
Sure. Like a brontosaurus versus a brachiosaur or whatever, right? There's some dinosaurs that actually don't exist.
I don't know, but it'd be cool if they had the original iguanodon with the thing on its nose.
Oh, yeah. You never know. I guess we'll have to bust out my copy and see what we can find.
I'm also stoked because it's not just... it's only theropods, so if you know anything about dinosaurs, it's two-legged dinosaurs that are meat-eaters.
Right.
But it's not just T-Rex and Allosaurus. They've got some that people have never heard of.
Even better.
Giganotosaurus.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. I probably couldn't even repeat that word back to you. Suchomimus?
Yeah. There are all sorts of really cool ones in this.
You can take a pill for that and it'll clear it up. But yeah, no, it looks super cool, right? The art is really good. It looks like the art from the original one, from what I've seen on the Kickstarter. And the art is really nice.
I was going to say, that's a guilty pleasure of mine. If you can produce a game that has some great artwork.
Yeah, seriously. Seriously, I'm down. There's a ton of that now. And that's we can get into later. But that's a really interesting advancement in the industry. It's because now you almost can't have bad art in a game because it will kill it in today's industry. So yeah, Apex... Collected edition. I've got to go through and see if I have any of the expansions already from like the original Kickstarter, because the copy I bought was a Kickstarter, but I don't remember everything that it has in it. So I'm going to have to go through and reference.
Well, the a la carte, it's only $8 per expansion.
Well, $8 for some of the 40 card ones, $10 for the bigger ones. But and like the 80 card ones.
And it adds two more players, so we can go up to 6 players.
So, but I was doing the math, and if I had bought, let's say I had to buy all the expansions, I almost just might as well go up to, what, the $95 and get the collected, get the whole shebang, and then sell my old one. Or trade it. Or cut you a deal. I know a guy who's got one. Could trade it to you or sell it to you. You got Girl Scout cookies, right? But yeah, so that looks really cool. I'm excited about it. I'm excited about it. It could be really neat. So we're going to have to bust out my copy and try to figure it out.
Absolutely. And since there's 2 weeks left, we better do it sooner rather than later.
Okay, twist my arm. Twist my arm. Okay, we'll play it. All right, what's the last one you got for us?
All right, so I thought we would end the Kickstarter with a lighter game. It is a party game. It's called Puns of Anarchy. It is one of the judge mechanic games, but it's not like other judge mechanic games where you have one judge and... you know, Cards Against Humanity or Apples to Apples or things like that. And the one judge, you put everything in front of him and he says, oh, I like this one best. And everyone has a laugh and you're done. This is more like a fast pace where everyone is the judge at the same time and you're constantly putting cards down and editing them. So all the cards are laminated and they're all band names or famous people or movies. Mm-hmm. And you have some aspect next to it.
Like food.
Food. And so... it might be you have a card that has the name of a band on it, and you have to scribble out part of it.
So let's say you had food as your topic, and then you played Sammy Hagar, and then you might write out, cross out the S in Sammy and make Hammy Hagar, right? Or Ham, right? And like basically make a pun.
Yeah.
A pun.
And so it's just... if you're a pun lover, it looks like it's actually pretty fun.
So initially, I was very dismissive of this. Like, just the name, it's like, okay, like, here we go.
Yeah.
But looking at it and looking how the gameplay was, actually, like, I've got friends that are very close friends that are not board gamers at all, but they do play party games with me, like Just One or Happy Salmon, whatever. Okay. Code names, things like that. Like, that game... I can take over their house, and we will play that all night, and we'll have a great time. So
I almost would say, like, I even have a collection of party games, and this sounds like one would be perfect just because, you know, you just have that extra little bit of, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, you got a whole other thing. And again, because we and it's funny because we had a conversation about the other night, we have a friend that hates the judge mechanic.
Yeah.
So as a rule, like, I would always just play the most offensive combo that I could, because it's either going to get like that I hate that this made me laugh vote, you know what I mean, or everybody else is just groaning and I'm just soaking it all in. even though I'm losing, and I'm fine with that either way. But that seems like a very nice fix. We'll have to play it and see, yeah. Right? But to see how that all works out. And the price point on it's pretty low, right?
Yeah, it's $33.
So yeah, so that's not bad. For a bunch of laminated game, because you got the laminated cards, right? And I assume it'll come with dry erase markers and whatnot.
Yeah, six dry erase markers, I think.
So yeah, and you could always, games like that, you could play with 10 people. You just buy more dry erase markers.
Yeah.
So that's how we do just one.
And it's puns, so.
Right. So it's either going to be really awesome or really awful.
Or both at the same time.
Usually both, right? It's like, okay, insert dad joke.
I had to mention my favorite one. Someone put down Death Cab for Cutie. Uh-huh. And someone put down Science. And they put down, they scribbled out and said, Death Lab for Curie. I was like, oh.
Nice.
Oh, that's terrible.
That's so many levels. All right.
So
out of our main topics of the rundown, those are the hot ones. Got through those. So now we're going to get into something a little lighter. We kind of got together. We're going to talk about our favorite board game mechanic.
Okay.
So, Spencer, what's your favorite board game mechanic? I'll let you go first.
All right.
I'm because before you start, I'm wondering if we're not going to have the same one.
My favorite board game mechanic doesn't have a name, so I would like to offer a name. Card economy. They're the kind of games where the cards have more than one purpose. Examples are San Juan, Race for the Galaxy, Motanai, The New Era, and Glory to Rome.
Glory to Rome's the big
Glory
one,
Glory to Rome
right?
is the big one right now. And it's just as popular. A Race for the Galaxy has so many expansions, and it is my favorite game of all time.
Mm-hmm.
It is made by Thomas Lehman, and he has, it's now a whole world. He's got so many more games in just that IP.
Sure, yeah. Well, there's Roll for the Galaxy now. And
Roll for the Galaxy, Jump Drive, New Frontiers.
Is that all in the same universe?
It's all in the same universe. Nice. Isn't that insane?
Hey, when you got a good thing, man, build on it, right?
Yeah, and I would like to try Glory to Rome. I've heard a lot.
I've got it.
About
I've never played it.
Well, you're going to have that one over, too. We're going to have a
I've had that game
night
on my shelf for years, I've never played it. So I need to get it off of my shelf of opportunity, is what I'm trying to call it now.
Opportunity. Oh, that's a good way
yeah,
to put it.
Yeah, nice positive spin. I did not come up with that on my own. I stole that from someone, but I don't remember who, so I don't have to give them credit. But,
well, the way I see it, it's an elegant mechanic because it forces you to make the choice between, am I going to use this card for its intended base value, or am I going to use this card to pay for something else? And some of them, you do other things with the cards.
Right, right. So Oceans has like a tiny bit of that. That's like the more recent one, right?
Yeah.
Where you can use it to build your tableau or you can discard it to do an action.
Move the fish around.
So, because when you get into the more complex levels, that's what it does, is it adds a lot more depth, no pun intended with Oceans, but it adds more complexity, right, to the game. So Oceans is pretty light still because it's a nice engine or tableau builder. But yeah, Race for the Galaxy, or
it's perfect for it.
Yeah, and from what I've heard about Glory to Rome is that you almost need someone to teach you how to play it, and that's I think why I have not gone, because there's times where I've hit up Tyler and been like, hey man, you want to come over? I've got to figure out how to play this game, and we just figure a game out, and that's fine.
Sounds fun.
It works, and, you know, it's not a bad thing to do. It's tough to do, like, on a game night when you've got, like, five or six people, which is why I haven't bothered you to do it, like, on one of your game nights, because it's, like, first you got to get everybody to want to play that game, and then you're like, oh, bad news, guys, we got to learn how to play it, and I heard it's really tough. Like, thanks for coming over. So I've tried to make it very, like, specific instances, like, hey, buddy, pal, friend, come over. Let's play something. I promise we'll play something you like afterwards in case this stinks. But I think we've had good luck, though, with it.
Right.
And we figured we play enough variety of games. It's not, I don't think anything has been too bad. There's been times where we're like, I don't know. but for the most part, so Glory to Rome, we're just going to have to do that. We're going to have to go, hey, guys, we're going to figure this out. And you can watch videos, I'm sure, and
yeah,
get it explained.
Videos. So do you have a game like that you've played that you like? or do you hate that mechanic?
Well, you know, like Tim was bringing about the oceans thing, I did enjoy it. The only thing is, like, okay, so I usually play games with Tim, but I'm playing with Tim to, like, get inside his head and think about what card would Tim need. And that's kind of like just how I play the game. I go like, Tim's going to want this card. I need it. I can't let him have it. And it may affect me, you know. But like, I would buy cards that would prevent Tim from doing a certain action, which, you know, that might be kind of our rivalry that we might have amongst ourselves.
Might be.
But, you know, like, I enjoy the game a little bit better with having that kind of component. And I mean, there's other games out there. But like, you know, we were just talking about the oceans.
Right.
You know, he would have something that was going for him, and I...
He's hate drafting.
Yeah,
he's
doing. Yeah, I'm
you
a hate drafter.
You go, oh, look at this card you wanted. I'm going to use it to move a fish.
Yeah. No, that would be great on my species, and you're just throwing it away, and you're like, yes, I am. Yes. No, but yeah, so I think there's a... That's a... I wonder if there is a name for that mechanic. I don't know.
I haven't been able to find one for it.
But that's a really good... That's a really good mechanic... When used well, because it does add so much more crunchiness, right, to the game.
I mean, San Juan is a simplified version of that mechanic.
Right.
It's based off of the Puerto Rico board game. And there's a card in that game called the Chapel. You play the Chapel, and then every time the round passes, you can take a card from your hand and eternally bury it under the chapel. So you're removing access to that card from everyone else at the table.
Oh, nice.
And so the end of the game is always fun for me when I go, oh, look at all these cards I had that you wanted.
Essentially a big middle finger to exactly. All of your friends. Yeah. So what's, what I'm going to see if, should I write it down on a card and show Spencer and
I mean, it would be interesting, but.
If we have the same one.
You can write it down if you want.
Oh, okay. To toss me one of those pens. We're going to do this. Here we go. I'm going to ruin your note card.
Okay, so being introduced in board gaming as I have been, my probably favorite mechanic would be deck builders.
Deck builders! High five.
So, you know, I've played board games in the past, and I really haven't found a game that really matched what I wanted to do. But with having a board game, or, you know, a deck building board game mechanic, I feel like I'm able to personalize how I would personally play.
Sure.
And when I say deck building, I also will include in there dice forging, because there's a board game called Dice Forge.
But and it is, you, yeah, no, go
on. I feel like it's the same thing. Like, yes. You play the game, like, because the game is supposed to be played a certain way, but I play the game how I would want to play it, which may not be what was it intended for. But I just like being able to create my own personal feel to the game.
There's something very satisfying, not unlike a good engine builder, where you draw this combo, and then you just have to wait for your turn to just lay all the cards out. And so I used to play Magic a lot. I stopped playing Magic because I wanted to stop perpetually spending money on Magic.
That's the reason everyone stops playing Magic.
And now I perpetually spend money on board games.
One or the other, my friend.
Right. But one of the things I loved about Magic is, like you just said, right? Like, you got your deck as almost your personality sometimes. You know, mm-hmm. Like, oh, yeah. I like to do this. Yeah. And, we play deck builders a lot together, just because we love them, right? We play the same one and it over and over and over and over, the same couple, really. And it doesn't matter that we've played it 100 times because we just like playing it.
It's a new way to play the board. Like we were talking about earlier with the strategy game, it might get dry because you do the same whatever. But like with the deck builder, you don't always get the same layout of how your deck would go.
Right.
Like I said, Tim and I have this little, you know,
rivalry,
and and sometimes I'll just buy stuff or take stuff that I knew you would want.
You want to, like, there are times, yes, where you get a card and you just are waiting for the groan. You're like, okay, where's the heavy sigh? Where is he going to go? You know, or you get the thing. But no, deck builders, to me, especially good ones, there's so much replayability in there, and you can adjust your strategy. You can change your you can just play completely different ways. Most of the ones that we play have a ton of expansions anyways, so we can always kind of get some variety. We have gotten to the point where we house rule some and we just kind of modify it where you start with extra this or extra that and just go, right? And there's some flexibility. Clank is really awesome for me. I know you love Clank as well. Both Clank and Clank in Space, because it is a deck builder, but there's a board and you've got, you know, the board to manage as well, right? So like, it's not, and one of my favorite games is a game that like hardcore gamers will poo-poo just out of hand, and it's DC Deck Builder. I love DC Deck Builder. It's made by Cryptozoic. Cryptozoic is not known for making amazing games like Stonemaier Games or Awakened Realms. I love that dang game. I'll play that game all the time. Anybody ask me to play that game, I'll sit down and play that game. And it's, we know pretty much what most of the cards do. Our turns are usually very fast. When we play, we can knock out a two-player game of that in like 20 minutes. And I don't care. I don't care. Marvel Legendary. Most of the Legendaries. I haven't played all of them, but I've played a few outside of the Marvel. I really like those. Now, setup can be a beast sometimes, but man, like you get a good setup, and if you lose, because the fun thing about that one is that it's a semi-co-op. So you've got to beat the overlord or the villain, but at the same time, at the end of the game, once you've beaten him, you're counting up your victory points to see who has won. So you've got to like balance this working together, you know, versus getting your own stuff.
Wait to stab him in the back at the right time.
So you don't lose. Right. So you do have to cooperate. And so to me, that's a really fun aspect. And also, you can play Legendary straight co-op. Like if I were to teach my 8-year-old that one, I wouldn't play it where we would count the victory points. I would just play it to, we just try to beat the bosses and we win. Perfect, right? And so for me, that kind of gives it like that tiny little tweak where you're not really changing any of the rules, but I can still have a different experience with my kid, you know, but then I can play with my buddies and kind of have a, where it's okay to be a little more competitive, you know, and really try to go after each other. Or if we've got friends that don't want to play it that way, well, we can play it straight co-op as well. So deck building is one of my favorites. And, you know, Clank, like I said, Clank is amazing. Concordia has a deck building aspect.
It does.
And Concordia will evergreen be like one of my top five games. I love Concordia so much, which is really funny. Because anybody that knows me and sees my board game collection sees all these games with gigantic miniatures and chuck and dice and area control and everything.
It's basically a card game.
and I love all of those games so much. But if you're going to ask me what my favorite, like some of my favorite games are, I'm going to talk about some other ones first. And like Concordia has no, like, I mean, they've got like decent little wood components, but it's not like a big flashy, you know, game or anything. So it's kind of an interesting, I guess I'm an omnivore, like when it comes to games, because I really love most games. I like a lot of games I play. There's very few that I don't like.
Yeah.
Interesting enough, like Dice Forge, right?
Yeah.
The die building mechanic on that like made my head explode. First time I played, I was like, "What?" Like,
this is amazing. I hope to see more dice, like not forging, because that's the name of the game. Yeah.
Dice. Yeah.
I have one called Kapow. Unfortunately, it's a two-player game unless you get a second one, and then you can make it a four-player
game. Okay,
right. So I've only been able to make it hit a table maybe two or three times. But it's a game where you have two kinds of dice. You have the one where you're forging the die as you go. And then there's colored dice, which are just normal dice. Mm-hmm. And as you go through the game, you're rolling dice to attack your opponent by basically selecting from this menu of moves you can make.
Right.
I think it's pretty fun, but
I'll have to play
hard
that.
To get it. Yeah, I'd love to play it with you.
It's just a matter of like only two people being there.
It's a two-player game.
If you thought one person was hard, try and get two.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have the problem a lot of gamers have where they can't get a large group over. I can say, hey guys, we're going to have a game night, and I can get six people over, no problem. Which means if I say, hey guys, I want to have a game night, and I want to play a two-player game, I then have to have another group that splits off to play a different game.
And we've done that. We've done that. Yeah. And that's, I'm always fine with that. I know sometimes it's, you know, it's nice when you can have everybody all in the same game. And sometimes you're going to, then you've got like five people that want to play a four-player game. And it's like, well, I guess.
Can we do that?
I guess I'll go over here and play this game. But you're like the whole time looking over at the other game that's happening. But, because yeah, that can't happen. The problem is the two players is almost too small.
Yeah.
It's like you have to just go, hey, man, you want to come over and play this game specifically?
Yeah.
And I've had a stack of games sometimes, and Tyler and I are going through them, and it's like three player, three player, three player.
Three is the hardest.
And three is really tough. I mean, no, you know, and the Catan specifically are really tough because it's 3 to 4. So you can't, unless you have the like an expansion that gives you like a 5 to 6 player thing. So that's like a really tough window to hit, because it's one thing if it's like 2 to 6, like fine, whatever. You know, even 2 to 4 isn't so bad.
It's pretty standard, yeah.
But three, you're like, oh boy. Like, because I have a similar problem that you do. If I go, hey guys, who wants to come over and play games? Well, if 8 people want to come over, it's
that's
like, okay,
where the party games start.
That's werewolf.
That's where the party games start. Or you're playing two-player games, so on and so forth. But back on track. It's fine.
You'd mentioned dice forging, and that actually got me thinking about another game that's actually more like die building. Roll for the Galaxy. In Roll for the Galaxy,
that's bag building, though.
Well, no. Well, okay, I guess it is. But every colored die has different faces on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're trying to buy the dice that you want. So it's not quite deck building.
It's
die building.
It's bag building. This is the term.
And then there's also tableau building. Mm-hmm. Race for the Galaxy is tableau building.
Mm-hmm.
Where, well, I'm not going to be able to get every awesome thing in the deck, but I can make really cool combos
and that's
based
where,
off of what I put on the table.
That's where like that game shines, because it does have your favorite mechanic, right, of the multi-use cards, but then it's also got like 4 other amazing mechanics in it, right?
It is an amazing game.
So DC Deck Builder is very limited because it is pretty much strictly a deck builder.
But I like deck builders too.
No, it's fine,
just
right?
No one ever brings them any over, and I don't have any.
Oh, I'll bring them all over.
We can change that.
Yeah.
Legendary is pretty much strictly a deck builder, but Clank, mm-hmm. Clank's got deck builder plus, right? Because you've got the map. You've got the map in your dungeon you're trying to delve through. So the cards you play give you different, you've got different paths you can take and everything. So that's why Clank like really got exciting. And then Dice Forge, it was just because it's dice and you're doing stuff on everybody's turns and there's no downtime really. It keeps the game moving.
Was good.
Yeah. It's
to keep people interested so they don't
get their phones out and then just not paying attention.
Oh yeah, that happens every game night.
Yeah. And I could stab people when you're like explaining the rules and they're on their phone. And then they're like, what's that? Like, I explained it, so I kind of don't want to tell you. Because I know for a fact you weren't paying attention when I discussed it.
Tim may or may not have some experience in explaining the rules to people.
You and I end up teaching games a lot.
We do.
And that's fine. I like teaching games. I don't mind it.
And half the time, it's a game I've never played, and I'm still teaching you how to play.
Right. Oh, and then when you get a rule wrong, you hear about it for years to come. But then they still want you to teach them games. It's like, well, you're not allowed to complain.
Yes.
But anyways, there was one other thing I wanted to talk about, and I brought this up to you the other day when we were hanging out. But I heard this on a podcast, and I thought it was really fascinating, is that hobby gamers, usually when they first start, they get in, they go hot and heavy buying a bunch of games, kind of building up a collection, and then they hit like one of 3 walls that sort of slows them down. The first wall, they're not in any particular order. First wall is like money.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, the hobby can get expensive. You're buying
indeed
nice, big, well-produced copies of games. Another one is time to play them, getting people over to play them. That all kind of goes in the same thing, right? Like having the ability to, if you live in a small town, maybe your game group doesn't get together that often. And then space, having the room. Some people live in small apartments and they don't have a lot of room or shelving. Some people live in houses and
they can't play Twilight Imperium because they don't have a table that's 12 cubic feet.
Right. Right. So for me, most people hit one of these walls and then they start to cull their collection a little bit. And that doesn't mean that they get out of the gaming industry, like out of the hobby. It just means that they slow down, they become a little more selective. I think I've hit all three of these walls at different points in time. My wife will tell you that I ran through the space wall like 2 years ago, and probably the money wall as well. But I thought it was really interesting because I'd never really thought about it, but never really had it broken down like in a way like, oh yeah, like this specifically identifies like three possible aspects, like three things that, you know, that you could run into. And yeah, it just kind of, I was listening and I'm like, oh yeah. And then I started thinking about my own experiences, and I go through waves sometimes, right? Where it's like, oh, I found a bunch of games really cheap and I scoop a bunch up and I get my hands on a bunch. And then I'm like, oh, I got to get rid of some stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like either trying to trade them or sell them or give them to your friends. Like, hey, just take this. Like, thank you. Like, no, I swear it's not a bad game. I just don't have room for it. And so, yeah, I've hit all of those walls. Have you hit any of those?
So when we first talked about it, I added a wall. I said it's prudence, where I like to keep myself limited in how many things I buy.
It's sure.
Not a money issue. I don't have a problem with that. It's not a space issue. I have plenty of space. It's not a time issue. I have a game out every Friday night. But I think I would actually change it from prudence. I thought about it a bit. It's more playability. If I don't think it's going to hit the table, I'm not going to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And as time goes on, I learn more and more about what's going to hit the table and what's not going to hit the table. Unfortunately, a lot of the games I want to buy aren't going to hit the table very often.
Well, that's, it's sort of like that Foundations of Rome, right? Like, that
exactly.
Game looks super cool.
I'd have to know that there's someone who wants to play this game with me.
Right, right. I've been there. I've got,
yeah.
I've got games that I love, but I'm only going to be able to play some of those games with like five people in my group, you know. Thankfully, this guy plays about anything that I ask him to. And doesn't complain unless I win. So
I do that a lot. Complain.
So have you hit, or have you? You're not in. I don't want to say that you're not new to the hobby because you've been going to conventions with me for at least like 3 years now.
Right.
I don't mean this demean you in any way, but you're not in as deep as I am, right?
Right.
Like in the hobby. And I fully admit, like, I'm in pretty deep. And that's fine. I'm self-aware, right? So from you, like, have you hit any of those? Do you see yourself in any of those? Or
with the walls that I've been presented with, I would say the one I'd fall closely with is the money one. But I only say that because the thing that I notice a lot is if I win a game, there's usually a friend group out there that has it.
Oh, sure.
So when I go to these game nights, or I go to the board game store, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
There's always that game there that somebody has. Now, some of them, I do go out and I'm like, gotta have this, gotta have it. Like, it's a deck builder, I'm probably going to buy it. If I really like the artwork, I'm probably going to buy
yeah.
it. You know, just so I have my little collection at home and I can just sit there and look at it, you know.
Right, right.
But that is the one thing that I say, like, I like buying the games, but the ones that I buy usually just end up sitting on a shelf.
Now, are you okay with that? Like, so for me, I've got, like, there's two aspects to my hobby. Is I want to play all of my games. I don't own any game that I don't want to play. Mm-hmm. My problem is that I own too many. But some of that is because I like the collecting aspect of it also, right? So I've got some rare games that I'm very happy to have in my collection. Like that Apex Theropod deck builder game, right? That was a very rare game. Now it's awesome that this new one's coming out because now that there's going to be buzz around it, it's going to be easier to get my copy played. It's going to be easier to,
yeah.
you know, to get it to the table. Awesome. Like, I'm great with that. So sometimes I do sort of reach maybe more out of the zone of like, this is going to be harder to get played, but man, like, it's kind of a grail game, right? Like a game that I really want to have in my collection. And I've got games that I specifically keep on my shelf that's like out because I want those games. Like, I like to just look at my game shelf sometimes and go, oh yes, like, I really like that. You know, I like that. It's just as a collector, right? And then I've got games that I've got down, you know, like in the basement on a shelf, like in book, I've got bookshelves in the basement that I've got a bunch of like the overflow games. And every once in a while though, I got to go through those and go, okay, like, this is either going to go up on the shelf, like upstairs for a little bit. And like, I'm going to try to get it played, or I got to rehome it. You know, I got to find a new place for it. And I've been getting better about going through and actively trying to trade games, or even start to just go like to friends and be like, or my nephews, like, who are starting to get into games, and be like, here you go. Like, I will come over and teach you how to play this. The rule is, don't give it to your friends. Don't lose it. Don't trash it. Yeah. But yeah, so it's.
Yeah. So what I was going to bring up is, so I've heard of people that make a list, and, you know, they say, I've played this board game, you know, this amount of times, or I've even played it at all this year. So for me, when I think about putting money into my hobby, which mm-hmm. it is a hobby, I try to think to myself, is this something that I'm going to want to play once? Am I going to want to play every single time I'm with people? Just say like, hey, this game is something I absolutely want to play. And that's kind of where I've got my collection at.
Sure.
I do have family that, you know, family get-togethers and like party games and stuff like
right.
that. So I do keep collection of that as well. And I have invested into that just so that way I can have.
Sure. But those are usually all relatively cheap.
Right.
And I look at the games and justify, because what I would call a real board game versus a mass market game, right?
Yeah.
So you get a copy of Monopoly, they're dirt cheap, whatever, you can buy them anywhere.
Just a reskin, they put, you know, different names.
Any copy of Monopoly, right? Doesn't yeah. matter. You can get one dirt cheap and it's fine. And if you, so let's say you spend $10 on a game and you play it once with four people. Did you get $10 worth? Like, if four people were to go to the movies, right, you're going to spend more than $10. Now, granted, you paid for everybody's movie tickets because you bought the game.
Right.
But, like, I've spent over $100 on a game. Now, one of them that I've done, I get played 15, 20 times a year, and it's always a big ordeal, and I always have an awesome time doing it. So happy I spent that money to do it, right? But if you drop over $100, sometimes, man, you're like, I blew $50 on this thing and I haven't even played it yet. And that's kind of a bummer sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, but I do feel like if you can, it's like party games, right? I got a handful of them. You keep them around because, you know, I'm hanging out with people that aren't gamers, but right. they want to have a beverage and play a couple games. And it's like, oh, these are perfect. Right. And then if they are interested in playing anything like deeper or heavier later on, you're like, hey, man, like, we're doing this if you want to come over and play. Right. But I do justify things in my collection also by going, if it's not just like, oh, no, this game is so rare. Like, if I let it out of my collection, I may never see it back. You know, I may never see it again. I mean, you have to just kind of come to terms with that. Well, I do. That's a me problem. But there are games where it's like, no, I get that played like all the time. Like, I don't want to let it go. And I get, there's plenty of games where I've gotten more than my money's worth. DC Duck Builder. I had to sleeve it because I was going to wear it out and buy it, and I was going to have to buy a new copy. And right. I would have. Right. Like, if the cards had gotten really bad. Because I play it so much. That's fine.
I'm going to have to sleeve my copy of Nemesis, I'm thinking, because, I mean, I only get that to hit the tape maybe once a month, but it's enough.
Yeah. But you, so you think about that, right? So you spent a lot of money on Nemesis.
Yeah.
And we're all, your game group is grateful because we all get to play Nemesis.
And it's probably my second favorite game ever.
But that's the thing, right? Is you get it played, even if you played it five times a year. But everybody, you get that experience because the level, like, everybody's standing up around the table at certain parts, you know, and like holding their breath and waiting to see what happens, right? So even just a couple of times a year, much less once a month, it's like, oh yeah, no, it's totally worth it, because everybody's going to keep coming back to it. You hardly ever go, hey, who wants to play Nemesis? And rarely is anybody like,
Their biggest complaint is that it takes so long. I'm like, well, yeah, if you guys learn how to make your turns, you know, less than half an hour.
Right. No, I will go around with a riding crop and whack people if they take their turn.
The nice thing about Nemesis is that it's so thematic. It is so intense.
Right.
Every time you play it, it is an experience. And it's not something you're going to get with games every time. But games don't have an expiration date. So
right.
I have a copy I bought for $80, way more than it's worth, of Riddle of the Ring.
Right, sure.
I played it once or twice with my brother. It's not going anywhere.
Right.
I can play it again. My child is currently 8. I have a son who's 3. And as they get older, I'll have all these games I can play with them.
Exactly. And there's the in some games, right? Like that one specifically, there's a nostalgia value attached to it, right? So I'm guilty of that. There's things that are based on IPs that I loved growing up, or like experiences that I had with either like my dad or, you know, like someone in my family, or even just some close friends. And it's like, I'm never going to let this game go, because even if I never play it again, I cherish it for what it represents, you know?
One of my favorite games... 1987 copy of Arkham Horror, original game, and it's because that's the game that my sister really introduced us to everything on. I thought it was Riddle of the Ring, but really it was Arkham Horror.
Sure, that really got you in and got
really
you going.
Really got me in and got me going. And part of that was because she got us into it way too young, and so we couldn't handle losing and stuff like that. So we weren't allowed to play it until we got older. So it's sitting there taunting us.
Forbidden fruit.
But it was still there when we got older.
Right.
And
yeah.
I played it. And, you know, after you play it when you're older, you're like, oh, yeah, this was fun once.
Right. You know what, though?
But the nostalgia is there, and I still want to play it again.
Absolutely. Well, I had second edition Arkham Horror and played it a couple times. I really like the game. It takes a long time.
Yes.
I've got a third edition I haven't played yet, but I've heard it's a little more streamlined, so fingers crossed. But I also am a sucker for the H.P. Lovecraft, like the mythos, the Cthulhu vibe.
Well, original Arkham Horror is nothing like the remakes.
Okay.
Nothing, not at all.
Sure. So yeah, I haven't played first edition, but...
Maybe if I can get my sister to visit, she can bring it.
And then we'll all just... put on our helmets and just be ready for a rough rough experience. But yeah, so as a collector, I've hit those walls a bunch of different times. Prudence is awesome. Like, I think that lifestyle choice is, obviously, it's a very good one, right? It's a very healthy one. Not that long ago, there was a whole trend about cleaning everything out. You know, there's the, you know, and minimizing things. I could never do it because... I mean, I guess if you held a gun to my head, I could pick 10 games that I could keep and have to get rid of the rest. But really, man, like, I would end up replacing stuff because I want it. You know, I want to have it. I like having people over and playing my games. I like, even if I don't get to play them with other people, like, loaning people game, you know, play this game, play the, you know, please. I just like doing that. That is a fulfilling part of the hobby for me, right?
But, getting other people into it.
Right, you know, I'll be your dealer. But yeah, no, it's just something I like. But I've made so many friends. I've made so many friends through different aspects of gaming, whether it were role-playing games, magic cards, you know, board games, especially present company included. You know, I've made so many friends and awesome connections through the hobby. And it's... this even more than like Magic, for example, right? Like, I really like Magic. I find that the community can get toxic sometimes. Individually, I know a lot of, I would say, casual players. All the casual players that I've ever played with are awesome. I love them. When you start getting to like the people that play in tournaments, and it's like, oh no, come on, like, can't we just have fun, you know? Like, because I will play board games to win, but I also just kind of want to have fun. Now, like, if we're playing a game that we all know how to play, well, then it's on, right? Like, let's be competitive and let's go for it.
That can be fun.
Right.
But can also be very not fun if, for instance, everyone piles in on the leader.
Oh, leader bashing,
yeah. Leader bashing. And suddenly the leader is in last place and he can't do anything and it suddenly is no longer fun for the leader. And that can actually make it not fun for everyone else.
It can, if the leader is really sour about it.
That's true.
But, that being said, like in dynamics of game groups, right? If we're playing like Werewolf, social deduction game, I get axed a lot because I talk a lot, right? I tend to...
In your defense, you get axed a lot because I personally get people to ax you.
That's fair.
I also get axed a lot. I don't know if it's just because I naturally bring attention to myself or it's because they automatically just assume I'm hiding something.
Right. Yes, both. Yep. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, so there's a lot to dig in. I think we'll get into that like on future episodes of the rundown. But it's really awesome to be here to be able to talk about it. And because that's what, back to the Tolkien thing, right? This is a fellowship. Like with the board games, like it is an awesome, like I have been fortunate to be a part of several smaller communities, like all coming into like one very large community in our region. And it's an awesome experience because I get to play games with new people. I get to play new games, get to make new friends. I've made so many honest and like genuine friends, like from the hobby. And it's given me so much. So I don't mind buying board games because I get a lot out of it. So anyways, I'll go out on a high note. Since we started with sad stuff, we'll go on a high note. And for the board game rundown, I've been Tim.
I'm Spencer.
And I'm Tyler.
You guys have a great day.
This has been the Board Game Rundown. If you liked our show, please subscribe, use the bell for notifications, and share this episode on social media. Thanks for watching. Let's talk about games.